Hi, I'm Kim Bussey Chamberlain, a paramedic, mum, and author. As paramedics, we're often asked, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? And I'm here to encourage a different kind of conversation, to uncover what it takes to work in these frontline roles and the privilege we experience in meeting and connecting with patients. This podcast is all about what it's really like to be a paramedic or any frontline uniform professional. Each week, you get to hear from the real humans under the uniform, the memorable moments they've experienced in their jobs, and the people that have stayed with them for life. Let's hear what life is really like beneath the blue lights. Welcome to Beneath the Blue Lights, the paramedic podcast. I'm Kim, your host for this series. Today, I'm honoured to have the wonderful Dr. Stephanie Patel on the podcast. Dr. Steph, as she's known in her brilliant podcast, the Medic Mum podcast. She's a mother of two and a GP. She also has a really helpful Instagram page full of handy family medical recommendations, as well as home and holiday inspiration. The reason I wanted Steph on the podcast is that I've long been a follower of hers on Instagram. In the early days of parenthood, that phase that none of the baby books actually cover, the part where you have a child to raise, her posts on women's health and pediatrics were so helpful. When it came to having my second baby during lockdown, her Medic Mum podcast was my maternity leave companion and resonated so much with so many of my own experiences. Also, when the story came up about Steph's little one having an allergic reaction and this happening pre-official weaning with a sneaky lick of ice cream, I think it was, on holiday, I knew she was my kind of person. These are tough times in the world for GPs at the moment. I'm simply in awe of all the plates that she keeps spinning whilst being a brilliantly positive and helpful presence on social media for the public. Hi, Steph. As I mentioned, it's a really tough time for GPs at the moment. So how are you doing?
Oh, firstly, thank you so much for that. That was such a lovely intro. And yeah, I'm just so glad that everything has been helpful for you. But it's also just so nice to be here as well. So thank you for inviting me on. And I'm really looking forward to having this little chat as well. So yes, in terms of how things are going at the moment, it is, do you know what? I'm in a really interesting position, I would say, because I actually left my NHS job after returning to work after I had my first. So I'm mainly doing private GP work at the moment. And so the private side is certainly busy, but I know that it's nowhere near the volume of NHS work. I look back on those days of NHS, like the worst days, and I think, oh my goodness, I'm sure it's even worse than that at the moment. But, you know, I've got friends, colleagues who are still working in the NHS and certainly hear about what they're going through. The patients that I see privately are also telling me about how things are at their NHS practice as well. You know, a lot of the reason why they have ended up at a private clinic sometimes is because the situation is really difficult. So yeah, I guess I sit in the kind of like a slightly grey area. I'm not in the thick of it, but I have experienced, you know, you know what it's like.
You know what it's like on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of think, oh, you know, you kind of have this feeling of, oh my goodness. Yeah. So I really, really feel for my colleagues at the moment. It is really hard. And I think the thing is that it was hard before the pandemic anyway. Sure. And I'm not sure that many people realize or the public realize how difficult it was, but obviously it's kind of more in the spotlight now. And so add on pandemic, add on, you know, now the waiting lists are even longer. It's even harder to kind of do what you want to do within the NHS as a GP, as a patient sometimes. So yeah, they're under a lot of pressure. And I think that the big worry really is burnout. I think that's what we're seeing a lot. Well, I don't know if, you know, you're seeing it amongst your colleagues as well. I think that's the huge factor is is burnout and also the future of the profession as well. I think that's actually really worrying too.
Yeah, definitely. I think, as you said as well, things were tough before the pandemic and this kind of last 18 months hit. And I think if you'd spoken to people at that time, they would have already said, like, things are really tough. Things are difficult. We're at stretching point. Or breaking point even. And burnout was a big factor then. And now it's even worse. Clearly there's so much more. People probably didn't think it could get much tougher. But then, you know, in comes the pandemic, the global pandemic that took everyone by surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Unprecedented times.
Yeah, definitely. Very much so. And I think also probably we didn't quite understand how long this was going to go on for, and how long the ramifications were going to go on for as well.
Yeah.
Thinking in terms of like months and stuff initially, and now it's shifting that to, well, it's years now, isn't it? It's going to be years. So it's really interesting to hear that obviously you have experience both in the NHS and that now you're working privately as well. Can you tell us a bit about how you got to where you were, what your background is, and when you started working as a GP and things?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually qualified in 2010 and then did my first couple of years working in London, the delightful Ealing Hospital, if anyone is there.
Oh, I know it.
Yeah.
I used to transport patients there.
Oh my goodness, it is. It's interesting. And especially like the first year as a doctor working there, let's just say it was a good experience.
Baptism of fire.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. I found that that's a phrase like people use, you know, when they want to sugarcoat something, they're like, it's a really good learning experience. You're like, hang on a second. Red flag. What is going on?
It'll be really good for your development.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, yeah. Oh, anyway. So yes, it was definitely a baptism of fire, like you said. And then I got my GP training job and then actually moved down there with my, well, we weren't married yet, but my now husband. And we did 3 years of training in Southampton and then qualified as a GP and then actually ended up moving back to London because both of our families are in London. We found we were just going up and down the A3 every week and like going to see them. And if anyone goes up and down the A3, you will know that there is a section that's like this 50 mile an hour average speed limit. And it is the most boring thing ever. We were like, we cannot do this to ourselves. Then moved back to London. We actually took some time out actually after qualifying because, again, as you know, as many, perhaps many people know, you don't really get the chance to have a really long period of leave in the job. You know, maximum it would be 2 weeks. And even that's a bit of a luxury. So we took 6 weeks out. We decided to go to South America.
Oh, wow.
Which was really, really cool. And then we found some jobs. I found an NHS job that wasn't too far from me and really enjoyed it. Then kids came along and kind of changed the landscape a little bit. So,
as they do.
Yeah, exactly. Priorities change and things. So, yeah, then made the switch over to private work. And then, yeah, here I am, I guess.
It makes you realize just how much work goes into getting to where you are. And what a long kind of path it is to get there as well.
Yeah.
How much you give to the job before you've even really started the job.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually mine is the shortest route as well. So altogether, wow, from starting medical school, yeah, 11 years. And that's the shortest route. I've still got friends who are, you know, like surgeons. So it's long. It's very long.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually remember at one point as a paramedic looking into graduate entry medicine as an option and reading that it was a quick path by doing it as graduate entry. And then I looked at the small print and I was like, oh no, it's not. It might be one less year in medical school. Yeah. But then it's like 10 more years on top of that. Yeah. So.
And actually they're just cramming everything into a shorter period of time. So.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so I didn't do that, given that I was looking at it when I was probably about 3 months pregnant with my first. And I thought, this is not the time. So as paramedics, our pet peeve is being asked, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? We get asked it so often. And it's one of those questions that I think people believe will open up a conversation with us about our profession and what we do. But actually, it just completely shuts it down for us. It's the one thing we really don't want to talk about. And I think it's similar to some of these other pet peeve questions or strange questions that come up sometimes when people want to talk to us about our jobs. Mm. And one of the ones that I've heard particularly recently, and in fact, I've heard it around my own GP surgery that I've been in, people asking, well, what does the GP actually do? And I don't know why we don't know that as a general public, because all of us have a GP and all of us go there for so many different reasons, from cradle to grave, really, right from when we turn up with our newborn babies to register them and do the 8 week, is it 8 week?
Yeah,
check
six
now?
To 8 week check.
Week that turned to 8 week in the pandemic, I think, at ours. And then they rolled all two into one. And so it's really from, you know, those very early days. But I thought it was a really interesting question for us to kind of unpack, maybe what you thought of that and how you feel about questions like that.
Yes, I think you're so right. And it's such an interesting thing to think about because to be honest. I don't think I really realized until recently, until I kind of joined the whole social media thing, you start to see other people's point of views. I think sometimes when you're in medical school, and even if you're in your specialty training as well, you've kind of got the blinkers on a little bit, don't you? And you just think, well, I know what I'm doing, so everyone else must know what I'm doing. But yeah, you're right, there is this perception, or, you know, misunderstanding, I think, a lot of the time, of what your GP does. The thing that people always ask me is, oh, so do you specialize in anything? Or, oh, so what are you going to specialize in? And I'm like, this is my specialty. And even interestingly, today I had to do this application thing, and I have to give some evidence of the fact that I'm on the register. You know, I'm on the General Medical Council thing. And it says, it literally says on there, is registered as a doctor or something like that. And then next to it says, is not on the specialty register. Because what they're talking about, obviously, is hospital medicine, like, you know, cardiology or whatever. And I was thinking today, I was like, I have a real problem with that, actually, because general practice is a specialty in itself. And I think that people don't realize that you can specialize in something that is general. It doesn't have to be specific. And the funny thing is that all of the questions that you would probably want to ask a doctor, those are questions that you need to ask your GP. Like my sister, she's an anaesthetist. She's texting me about dermatology stuff, like, what do you think this rash is? Or I've got this mosquito bite. What do you think I can do about it? All of those kind of like everyday bits that you would ask. Actually, it's a GP that's going to know the answers. Everyone else has still, you know, very qualified, very bright, obviously, but their range of knowledge is going to be within their specialty. So yeah, it's a really interesting one. And that's why I love actually being on social media, because it's so nice to, I say, represent the profession. I wouldn't think of myself like in that way, but nice for people to see like an insight into what I as a GP get up to, and that I'm, you know, maybe a normal person as well. And that actually they might be surprised at the amount of stuff that we do know, that we can deal with. So yeah, I think that that's really important as well.
And kind of the range of knowledge, I think, that you guys even can demonstrate on there, just from your, the facts and the information that you put up on different posts and things as well. Yeah. If you just do a quick scroll through, there's just so many different things covered in so many different areas. It's amazing. And it's a very clear demonstration of how wide your kind of knowledge base is.
Yeah, and that's why I love it so much as well, because obviously with like most jobs as a, you know, as a healthcare professional and lots of other jobs as well, you'd never stop learning. But really, I realized that especially that general practice in particular lends itself so well to the type of post that I do as well, because I'm never going to run out of stuff to post about, because it could be anything. You know, we don't have a schedule or an agenda of, well, these are the only people that are, these are the only topics that I know. People literally just come in, they walk through the door, you have no idea what they're going to tell you as they sit down. And I actually find that really exciting. It kind of keeps me on my toes as well.
Okay, I think it sounds amazing. And I think I have a lot of respect for all of your knowledge and what you guys do know. And I think especially now that I have kids, and even as a healthcare professional, you know, I get it a lot. People being like, oh, it must be so reassuring, you know, to be a paramedic when you have children. And I think, oh my God, no, it's actually terrible. All it does is mean that, you know, I've seen some really worst case scenarios. And so my child sniffs and I'm like, oh, it's probably...
Yeah, it means this.
And then I come up with the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And then I have to call my GP. and he knows us very well now, I won't lie.
But you're so right, though. I think that as a medic or a healthcare professional, I think you either fall into so chilled and like super laid back. You're like, if their arm's not falling off, I'm not going to worry about it. Yeah. Or you fall into the other category, like, but it could be this. What if it's this? Like, you know, shouldn't we be doing something about it?
Something else.
So yeah, I think it's always really interesting to see, even like with my friends who are working in healthcare, like what their approach is when they become parents as well.
It's an eye opener as to just how panicked you can be about your own child.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in terms of questions that you think people should be asking you, and I guess interestingly for you, being on a platform like Instagram that you are, there's probably the opportunity for you to be asked so many questions by people. So what kind of questions do you actually like being asked by the public when they want to talk about your job?
I guess if you want to engage someone in a conversation about their job, I think starting off with something positive is always a good place to go from. Mm-hmm. So even just saying, so what's your favorite part? You know, what's your favorite part about the job? What do you enjoy the most about your job? Because yeah, I will just get the conversation started on kind of a lighter note rather than, oh God, it's terrible being a GP at the moment, isn't it? Like, yeah, I don't know, people won't really want to talk about that. So I think that's quite a nice way to do it. But also being mindful of the situation at the moment. People are so nice, you know, and they say, well, how are you doing? You know, how are things? Knowing that it is tough. It's just kind of checking in on someone, I guess, from a mental health point of view is always really lovely. But I think kind of showing genuine interest. And the thing is, do you know what? It's really difficult because I feel like sometimes nowadays you can go to one extreme where you feel like, gosh, it's really difficult to start up a conversation and say things in the right way. And I think if you're not quite sure how to and you're worried about saying the wrong thing, I think being really honest and just saying, well, look, mm-hmm. do you know what? I don't actually know much about what it's like to be a GP or what it's like to be a paramedic. Like, tell me about it. Like, what's your day to day? And just opening up the conversation in that way, because I think you then invite people and they're like, oh, well, you know, let me tell you all about it, rather than going in with like an assumption.
Yeah. And I guess sort of preconceived ideas that then make people feel they have to mount a defense or provide evidence about what yes. they do or what their role is and that sort of thing. And ultimately, I think in my experience, for the most part, a lot of healthcare professionals in these frontline kind of roles do actually like talking about their jobs when they get the opportunity to do it in a positive way, because they're all jobs that we've trained for and we've worked hard to do. And it's one of those things that's a passion as well.
Yeah.
Because you have to really like it to work in a lot of these conditions.
Yes.
And and to be doing that job, actually, as they say, a lot of things like the NHS survives on the goodwill of the people working in it. So you really do have to care about the job and you have to really want to do it to be doing this kind of job.
Yeah.
So people do want to talk about it. It's just in the right way.
Yeah. So true. So true. And I think if you do open it up in that way, it will become really evident, you know, if there's a lot of passion as well there. And that will just kind of fuel the conversation even more, which is really nice.
So I guess the other thing is, I'm sure that you get it a lot, any kind of dinner party, drinks situation that you go to, are you constantly asked, oh, actually, while I've got you here, could you have a look at this rash? Or can I ask you about my great grandmother's best friend's neighbor's dog's person that they pass at the park every day has got a sore. What do you think it is?
Yeah. I get that a lot. Or the funny thing is like when my mum and dad, or particularly my mum, tries to tell me what is going on, and I'm like, I've said that now. Sometimes, you know, you've just got to pick your battles, but I have at some points been like, but mum, you know, I'm a doctor, right? She's like, I know, but this is actually what's happening. I'm like, okay, mum. Like, she's still my mum. You know, it doesn't matter how qualified I am. She's like, I am the mum, so you will listen to me. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll accept it from her. But yes, otherwise, from other people, it's, do you know what? It's quite funny because, like you said, it always happens. And, you know, you can't shut it down. Otherwise, it's just super awkward, right, to be like, well, I'm not your doctor. So I will usually indulge them a little bit, give them a bit of information, or, you know, go to the extreme and be like, oh God, I'd be really worried about that if I were you. Depending on what their type of humor is. Cause you know, you've got to gauge it right.
The right audience.
Exactly. But actually when that happens, I think I take a step back and actually I realize that it's such a privilege. Even on social media, you know, I can't give personal medical advice, but you know, people will try. And I just think, instead of getting annoyed by it, I think this is someone sending you that, you know, you just don't know very well, divulging personal information to you and genuinely kind of wanting to know what you think about it. And the same thing goes with kind of any kind of social situation as well. And I guess that's the same with patients that come in. You know, patients will come in and they will tell you, some of them will tell you their like deepest, darkest secrets that they have not had the courage to tell anyone. And you really realize like what a privileged position it is to be in. So yeah, lightheartedness aside, that's one of the things also that I love about the job.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It is such a privilege, and I think we definitely all feel that as well. It also provides us with, you know, some real hilarious moments as well.
Yeah.
I think my best one as a paramedic has been from my sister-in-law, who, when we were at her house, and she was like, "Oh, Kimbo," she calls me Kimbo. She's like, "Oh, Kimbo, the dog's nose is really wet." And I was like, "Okay." And she's like, "Well, what? Why? What do you think it is?" And I was like, I haven't got a clue. Why would I know? If I've never owned a pet dog in my life, I know nothing about animals." She's like, "Oh, but you're a paramedic, so you know, could be something to do with like the health." And I was like, "Yes, a paramedic, not a vet." There is not that. That's that. No. And she was really shocked that I really didn't have a clue.
We're like, they did not cover that in training.
Funny enough. No,
that's so funny. Can you diagnose my dog?
So I guess leading on from that, do you have any particularly memorable moments as a GP that have stayed with you, either because they've been very funny or kind of heartwarming situations and things that you'll think of for a long time?
So there are probably things that, there are definitely stories, but I feel like some of, I probably can't, they're probably ones that are probably best kept away from more public platforms like podcasts. I don't, you know, stuff getting stuck in various orifices that you will see in A&E.
Like, it's come up a lot on this podcast.
Yeah, it's always a classic. And, you know, in terms of what the objects are as well, is always, let's just say there was someone who had a jam jar stuck somewhere. And you just think, how?
How? Yeah.
I don't know how.
Oh, it's always slipping over, isn't it?
Yes, It was an accident. So there are lots of those stories. But actually, I remember the next thing that came into my head was when I was a GP trainee. And obviously, like, in terms of the setup, I would go and call people from the waiting room. They come in, they close the door, sit down, you've introduced yourself, and then you get going. But this one patient, I literally came in, I think I just about turned around and sat in my chair and was about to introduce myself. And he had already dropped his trousers and was showing me a rash on his groin and just went, "What do you think that is?" And I was literally like, I think I must have just like reflex, like put my hand up to be like, "Can we just... I haven't even,
give me a
I just need to introduce myself first." I literally said to him, I was like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, this is not, we'll get to that, don't worry." But yeah.
I know that we ask, when we say we want appointment times, but not, we don't need to
be that
quick.
I know, that's the thing. I then was like, well, yeah, sometimes I do think that people take a little bit too long to examine. So, you know, he's doing me a favor here, or maybe I'm just running really late and he really needs to get somewhere. But yeah, bless him. But he was just standing there. But anyway, so that is a very memorable one for me. But also, like you said, as a GP, you see so many heartwarming stories, because the thing also that I love about it is that you get to, you know, it's hard in the NHS now to have that consistency, but the dream is that you have your patient list and you have those patients that come in and they see you frequently, you get to know them, you get to know like members of their family, and then maybe some of them will get pregnant and then they have babies and you see their babies and you see them grow up. And that is one part of the patient journey that I really love. And the nicest thing is seeing someone's name and you think, oh, they've come in today, you know, and they come in and you don't even have to do the introductions. It's just, "Hey, how are you? Oh, how was that holiday that you went on?" It's just like,
yeah.
You just strike up that conversation, and that sense of familiarity is something that I really, really value.
Yeah, I think that's really, really nice as well. And that's something that we as paramedics definitely don't have. Well, I suppose we do have some regular
you have the regulars,
patients.
Yeah. Are they,
but it's a different
is it heartwarming?
Kind of relationship.
I'm not sure. I'm not so sure.
But it's definitely something that I look at in your role and think, oh, that would be nice. Because often when we have patients and, you know, we see them in some really difficult circumstances, and then once we hand them over at the hospital, depending on how busy our shifts are, we might not get back there that shift. So if we do, we'll often try and poke a head in to see what's happening and see if they're okay, or we'll catch up with one of the doctors in the hospital to say, oh, what was the outcome or how are they doing? And we might check later down the line. But for the most part, that's kind of the end of the story for us. We don't get to know anything else. Yeah. And I always think that would be so nice if we got to know a bit more about them and a bit further down the line, like what was going on for them in their lives.
Yeah. But equally, it's so valuable to be there. You're right there at the beginning. I mean, the situations that you must find yourselves in, and, you know, I guess it's similar to GP in that, you know, when you turn up, you just don't know what you're going to find. And so I remember as a junior doctor in particular, like, you know, sitting in A&E and doing the clerking. And if there's always that piece of paper with all the history and stuff written like by the crew.
Yeah.
And some of them are filled in more and some of them are filled in kind of less, but the ones that were just like, you know, they're just like squeezing in all of the writing, I'd be like, thank you for all of the information, because it's so valuable.
Do you know what? It's funny because sometimes some of our favorite patient handovers are when we go and collect them from a GP because I love turning up to a GP surgery and picking up the patient, and then the GP hands over this absolutely wonderful white envelope and you just open it up and out comes a letter, and it's all the basic obs, patient history, got the name all written out, so you have everything you need, and you're just like, oh, this is gonna make the paperwork so much easier.
It's so funny that you talk about the envelope as well, because I did think about that. I was like, one time I think I gave someone a letter just to go to A&E themselves. It wasn't that we had to call an ambulance, but I was like, look, they'll see you in A&E. And I was like, why am I putting it in an envelope? Like, I don't know. It's, well, if they drop it on the way or something like that. It was just such a, but it's very formal, isn't it? But I'm glad to hear that other people feel the need to put it in an envelope too.
To put it in an envelope. I love that envelope. So
good. Okay, good. I'll carry on doing it.
One of the other bits that we have kind of been covering in the podcast is around mental health and working in these different frontline roles as healthcare professionals and how we look after our own mental health and the importance of maintaining good mental health in these jobs. And I guess, particularly given the current climate for GPs, and I know that you're working in the private sector now, but as you say, you know people who are still working in the NHS, but also for you, I suppose, being public facing on your Instagram page and things, you're probably also privy to hearing a lot of things at the moment that are not necessarily very nice. So I guess now more than ever, as a GP, it's really important to be looking after your own mental health. What do you think good mental health looks like in your job? And do you have any particular coping mechanisms or hobbies or things that you've employed through time that really help you out?
Yeah, so I feel like it's like make or break at the moment. Mm-hmm. And you're right, I think it's so important to be able to look after our own mental health. And I think that it's an interesting position to be in, because we as healthcare professionals, we're like, look, this is really important, you must do it. But I think that as the healthcare professional, we are the worst at doing it. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, especially definitely. In the NHS, you know, it's run on goodwill. And so the number of little sacrifices that you make on a daily or weekly basis, you know, oh, well, I'll just stay a little bit longer to do this. You know, I've skipped meals before. I'm sure you have as well. We haven't drunk enough, you know, not taking your break when you have to. All of those little things, they do kind of gradually build up. And it can be really difficult to see that in yourself, because, you know, you're the one, you're the doctor, you're the paramedic, you're the nurse, you're the person who's helping other people. You don't need the help yourself, but obviously we do. And so I think to be able to step back and actually reflect and think, I need to do this, is the first big step for all of us. And in terms of what does good mental health look like, I think not letting the job be all consuming is probably the huge thing, and being able to have boundaries, because it's so easy to take your work home with you, you know, and if, especially if significant things have happened that day and you think, gosh, you know, should I have done that? Could I have done that differently? Was I right to make that decision? And, you know, as a paramedic, as a GP, you see so many different patients each day as well. And so if you're thinking of that about each one, or even like, you know, every second or third patient contact, that, again, the mental load, you know, what you take home with you can be massive. So I think being able to really leave it at the door, or, you know, as soon as you get home, being able to kind of switch off is really important, and having those boundaries. I think we all have better days, we all have really bad days at work, but I think being able to look at your working week as a whole and think, how do I feel when I wake up in the morning? Am I happy? Do I feel positive about going into work? You know, maybe you're not skipping into work. You know, I certainly don't skip into work every day, but generally the feeling is over time, you're like, yeah, this is good. You know, if you're getting to a stage where you're thinking, I'm really dreading it, or like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm just not looking forward to today, which I am sure is how a lot of people are feeling at the moment, that is when it needs to kind of send an alarm bell to think, okay, well, I need to do something about this. I need to kind of change it up. And I think that is where things like hobbies or just ways of relaxing, you know, everyone will have their own thing. Some people want to go for a run. I do not want to go for a run because I hate running. I tried it. I do not like it.
Oh, I hate it so much.
It's just, yeah, I'm always in awe of those people that can just, you know, I'll just pop out for half an hour, like on their first run. You're like, how have you managed to do that? I need to like train up to do that. But anyway, you know, whatever it is for you, knowing what it is and actually being able to do it as well. And I think that I'm certainly still learning how to do that. And I think it probably is something that you continue to learn and kind of develop and refine as you progress through your career. Being able to approach that, you know, if you are getting to the point where you are really struggling, having the confidence to go and tell your senior or your line manager, whoever it is that you need to tell, being able to have that conversation with them and feel like you're not going to be judged or fobbed off, again, is really valuable. And unfortunately, I think the reality is that that's not the case for everyone. And sometimes it is a case of, I don't know, sometimes it's not a competition, but sometimes it is a case of like, well, you know, that's just how it is. You just have to kind of carry on. And it was worse in my day. Or sometimes you get that kind of chat as well, which is just not helpful.
No.
Yeah, a long-winded answer, but basically, I'm still learning. And but it's a really important skill. And I think that's the thing. It is a skill.
Yeah.
To be able to recognize it in yourself and to actually to be able to work on it.
I wonder how many healthcare professionals you've maybe seen as a GP. Mm. So paramedics is what I'm most familiar with. But when we look at the rates of mental health problems that paramedics have, the numbers are astonishing. I think officially the statistics say that paramedics have a higher rate of PTSD than soldiers returning from active duty.
Oh, wow.
And it's due to like the constant exposure to trauma, but also it's not necessarily the big trauma jobs for everybody in that role. It's just the little ones that chip away sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at those statistics, I wonder what the crossover is of people who actually have approached their own GPs as healthcare professionals to go and seek help for themselves. I definitely burnt out and I had PTSD myself. And I never went to see my GP. Mm-hmm. And it's made me think of that because I don't know why I didn't. And I don't know why I didn't think that that would have been a good place to start. And I really let it go for a long time until I eventually got help through the service and they referred me through occupational health. And then I kind of entered the system as such through work. But it took a really long time. And at no point did I think that maybe it would be a good idea to go and see my GP because they sat in the same world as me, but also sat outside of the specific organization that I was working in the ambulance service. And that would probably have been a really good place to go. And it's just made me think that I wonder how many people you see that are healthcare professionals or whether actually those numbers are really low because we are notoriously bad at looking after ourselves.
Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right. I, you know, as a GP, mental health is actually a really large part of what we see. I think the statistic is that it's roughly a third. But if I think of the patients and how many of them are healthcare professionals, it is quite low. I think I've maybe seen a handful recently, but you're right. That doesn't mean they're not out there. We know that they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think taking that step is really, really difficult. And I think I know personally that if I had to reach out for help, I would actually find that really difficult as well, because it's just not the role that you're used to. We're not used to being the patients. And I mean, the only thing that I can liken it to a little bit is when we were trying to have a baby. So we ended up going through like fertility treatment. And I remember there was a point where my husband said, look, I think, you know, it's been a while. I think we probably need to go and see someone. And I was like, what do you mean? And if anyone had come and said, you know, given me the story, I would have said, yeah, that's completely reasonable. But even me, like I was resisting because I was like, there isn't a problem. You know, everything is fine and it will just be fine. We don't, you know, what, going to see a doctor, mm-hmm. that means that it's official, isn't it? There's something yeah. about it that makes yeah. it a thing. So I completely get where people are coming from. But I think that mm-hmm. being able to talk about it openly, you sharing your story, anyone who has been through anxiety, depression, you know, PTSD, whatever it is, whatever you have experienced as a healthcare professional, being able to say that and saying that you've found the support and the help that you needed just normalizes it for other people. Because it's always so important, you know, with everything, being able to share and hearing other people's stories, that inevitably makes more people willing to share their own story. And the great thing yeah. is that I think through COVID, there have been lots of, like, a few charities, haven't there, that have been yeah. set up,
I was
you know,
say.
Just, what was the one of them?
I think Frontline 19, yeah, I think, and, is that one of them or something?
It's all aimed at healthcare professionals and kind of supporting mm-hmm. their mental health. And although it was an awful way to have to, you know, arrive at these organizations being developed, like, it's so brilliant because yeah. actually that's kind of what was needed in the first place.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think the main thing is just that we're very good at denial.
yeah, I think it is. I think it's denial and also the kind of like self-preservation, I think it yeah. was with me. And I also thought, if I go somewhere and address this, then I'll have taken the lid off it. And then I don't know how big all the feelings will get. And I won't be able to put them back in to be able to go to my shift again yeah. tomorrow morning. And I was thinking, I've just got to do the next shift. And at some point, I might have a break long enough that lets me sit with this and then go and address it. And clearly you don't get a break long enough when you're working a shift pattern in the NHS. That just is non-existent. But I really just thought, if I try and do something about this, then I'll open the floodgates and then there's no way I'll be able to go into work. And I think, like you say, there's probably a lot of people who feel like that now. And I hope that with the existence of these charities and some more conversation happening around it, that more people will be inclined to reach out to those places, even if it's anonymously. And I think some of these ones that have been set up provide things like counseling services anonymously for healthcare professionals that are fully funded. And that's, you know, hopefully going to make it easier for people to access these things.
Yeah.
But also go and see your GP.
Exactly. Just see anyone, you know, even if it isn't your GP, just speak to anyone, like a friend or someone, just reach out, because every single person either has experienced it themselves or knows someone who's going through a difficult time. So yeah, it's just suffering in silence is not the place that we want people to be in either.
Yeah, it's definitely not the one.
No.
On a lighter note, maybe, if you could change one thing to make your job easier, what would it be? And let's imagine that there was no such thing as budget constraints.
Oh, I was going to say money would be like the one thing. I think it's got to be like resources, because mm-hmm. I think such a huge part of the difficulty of working, I think, with any system, but, you know, healthcare system, is the availability of resources. Sometimes you know what people need, but them actually being able to get to it and access it is a completely different ballgame. And I think mm-hmm. that's where things start to fall apart, because you think, oh, okay, you've got this problem. Okay, well, actually, we need to find about it. Let's send you for a scan. Let's get an MRI scan. Okay, if it's a 2-month wait for an MRI scan, what happens in that time in between? It's yep. really difficult, you know, because people will inevitably come back. And then if you think it's the same thing with if you need to go to the hospital and see a specialist, it would be so wonderful if we could just have resources on tap. Yeah. Like, I remember working in A&E, and going from working in A&E to then working in general practice was just such a huge shock. I remember my first patient that I went through with my GP trainer as a GP. He was like, okay, so what would you do next? I was like, well, you'd want to do, you know, full blood count, liver function tests. You know, I was basically ordering all of these tests and investigations. He was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I can tell that you've just come from working in a hospital. He's like, we're in general practice. You don't have any of that stuff at your fingertips. I was like, sorry, what? He's like, oh. Yeah, I'm, what? So it was such a huge shock to the system. So basically, if every clinic could be like a mini hospital, wouldn't that be wonderful?
It would be.
With an MDT right there on tap that you could just, you know, ask opinions of. I mean, that's just never going to happen. But, you know, you did say if there was.
It would be
a dream. Exactly. You did ask.
Well, Steph, I've loved having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on, having a chat. and sharing all of your knowledge and your stories with us. Lastly, if our listeners came across a GP or come across a GP in the next few days, what's the one question you think they should ask you?
Ooh. I think I would go back to kind of what we were saying about, how are you doing at the moment? I think is a nice thing to ask your GP. And if you've got some positive words of encouragement for them, you know, a positive story, or even if you know that GP and they've done something that you've really appreciated, telling them is really valuable, because we don't get a lot of feedback, actually. You get the complaints and you get like the negative feedback, but actually, you know, hearing positive feedback, we all know when someone pays us a compliment, it just makes your day and just kind of makes everything a lot brighter. So yeah, if you can, you know, some nice kind words and some encouragement as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the thank you letters, and like you say, they're fairly rare, but occasionally we as paramedics also end up getting thank you letters from certain patients. And whenever you get something like that, it's just so touching and it really makes your day, and you kind of get a letter like that and it makes everything worth it. And it really reminds you why you're doing your job as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
It goes such a long way.
Yeah, so true.
Brilliant. So we're here to provide an authentic voice for uniformed professionals and give our listeners a realistic insight into the jobs that we do. And you've done just that, Steph. So thank you so much again.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Honestly, it's been such a pleasure. Well, that's it for today's episode. We'll be back next week speaking with another uniformed professional about what it's like beneath the blue lights. Thank you for being here, lending your ears to our frontline workers. We're here to shift the conversation, and we can't do that without you. Thank you to Dr. Stephanie Patel for being our guest today. Remember to follow us on @theparamedicpod on Twitter and @theparamedicpodcast on Instagram. If you found this podcast to be useful and enjoyed listening, please do leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, as it really helps other people like yourself to find the show. Thank you to Pure Creation Media for producing the podcast, and I'll see you next week.